Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
The coronavirus pandemic has changed the rhythm of our daily lives in so many ways, from work to childcare, as we just talked about before the break, and even what we wear. The clothes that we choose and why we choose them can reveal a lot about the cultural moment that we're in. And as we embrace some long-term changes in how we live, we want to talk now about how this pandemic is changing our fashion. Now, I did not have any masks in my closet or in the mitten basket by the door at this time last year. How about you? Call us and let us know how things are changing for you. How has your fashion changed? Or how are you thinking differently about fashion in the last few months? Wearing the same stuff you used to when you work? And we're also going to talk about masks. How do you feel about masks? Are masks becoming a way that you express yourself? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can tweet us at Radio Boston. We have two people joining us to have this conversation. The first is Erin Robertson. She's a Boston-based fashion designer and the winner of Project Runway Season 15. Erin, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here today.
Glad to have you. And we also have Kimberly Alexander, who teaches museum studies, material culture, and American history at the University of New Hampshire. Kimberly, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So I'm glad to have you. Erin, I'm going to start with you. You call yourself a fashion scientist on your Instagram. What does that mean?
Well, I have like a bit of an issue with just being a fashion designer because I don't think it quite represents the sort of like intent that I put into all of my clothing. I have a lot of knowledge embedded. Just sometimes it's very obvious and sometimes it's a little bit more secretive and you have to look a little bit deeper or read about why I do something. And so that's part of it. And so there's a lot of research that I actually put into a lot of my work. And the sort of more obvious side is I'm super into the future of fashion and how technology is going to really change that. So an example is I've worked with Jifei Wu out of the MIT Media Lab, where we created a 3D printed fur coat. And using his technology, which I won't go into too much just because I don't think there's enough time. Merging that with my design, we were able to make this, we've made a few coats now. Out of this, his 3D printed technology, and it feels just like fur. So
that's exciting.
Sort of where I come from.
and Kimberly Alexander, tell us what it means to teach about material culture. What is material culture?
Well, material culture is essentially any object that's created by human hands. But what makes it so exciting, at least for me, is the study of the stories that go along with the objects, whether they're objects in museums or objects in your home, or even, as we'll be discussing today, objects that you put on your body.
So let's talk about that a little bit. If we think about fashion, Erin and Kimberly, in terms of what we put on our body and what that tells us, what story that tells, what story do you think the fashion transition we're going through right now is telling? Erin, how about you?
Well, I'm a big fan, and sort of my idea of fashion is that it's an extended phenotype of our identities. So I think that what I'm really noticing is almost sort of there's this super comfort of I'm buying sweatpants, leggings, like to the 10th degree, where it's just that's the sort of like normal life now. But then there's also for me, what I get really excited about is I think this is also like a great opportunity to sort of push the boundaries of the way that you sort of like see yourself. So I think a lot of people are afraid to try color or afraid to try maybe a different shape on their body or maybe be a little bit more feminine or masculine or try a new trend that they were always afraid to do. But I think that now you kind of have this time to try it out, maybe in the comfort of your own home, maybe post it on Instagram or TikTok and see how it works rather than going out and like being vulnerable, like on the T, or, you know, getting mocked or thinking that you're going to get mocked. But I think it's a really exciting time to actually try something new.
And Kimberly, when somebody teaches about material culture 100 years from now and looks back at this part of this moment, right, these early days, what do you think that they're going to say about what's happening for us culturally?
Well, actually, I'll just, I had an anecdote. The last day that we had in-person classes, I had two young female students come up to me and they said, do you think this will be studied 100 years from now, what we're going through right now? And I said, absolutely. So start your journals and creativity projects. I think it's a little bit difficult to say right at the moment when we're in it, where things will end up and how they might be studied. But I wanted to sort of tie back into something that Aaron said, because if you look back in time, and I've been spending a good bit of my research looking at the 1918 influenza, and particularly also gender issues related to how masks were worn, how they were designed, and how they were written about. One of the things that strikes me, it ties in with Aaron's idea of the creativity. We don't tend to think of a lot of perhaps creativity in mask making when you look back at the photos that we have of 1918. But if you start looking at some of the drawings in people's diaries and their journals, even announcements from different newspapers, there's a real focus on individuality, on people picking masks that were part of their persona. And so one of my favorite sort of cartoons shows an elegant woman with a hat and a veil. And so I've been looking a lot at the way women used veils, both in a sort of distancing, social distancing way about the influenza, but also maybe about unwanted gazes from onlookers when you're out and about more. Or the gentleman who designs his mask theoretically with a hole for the cigar he can't stop smoking, you know, and then
you know, love that.
Puffing away through his mask. Or if you think of some of our masks today, you've got designers like Louis Vuitton, you've got most alumni associations of universities doing their own masks. You have a lot of really diligent home crafters and designers creating masks. And I came across this image of a mask. Again, it's a cartoon, but that says, to hell with the Kaiser, right on the mask. So you're
right on the mask.
Right on the mask. So you're again, it's that projection of self in a way that I think in 1918, we would not necessarily have expected.
So we've got a caller who I think will weigh in on this projection of self idea. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We want you to join the conversation. What are you thinking about in terms of what you're wearing? Has it changed? Are you finding ways to express yourself? Or are you feeling overwhelmed by things like face masks and sort of the lack of need to wear your best stuff out? We've got John on the line from Newton. John, go ahead.
Hi, I am a grocery delivery driver. I have my own business. I've been doing orders nonstop since this began. And I did Instacart for about a year before this. And I often wore long socks and shorts because it made me feel faster in the store. I sort of rushed around, felt sleeker with the long socks on. And I've been sort of going through a personal renaissance lately. So, you know, fashion choices are becoming something that I'm thinking about more. And as my business has grown, I'm sort of able to afford it a little more, you know, get a whole bunch of different socks and some brighter colors. Part of it, I think, is to help people improve their moods. You know, one of the things that I love about this work is that when I show up at someone's house with a pile of groceries, they're delighted. And it brings me joy. So to show up in colorful stuff, it's fun. And I think it's sort of the highlight of some people's day. You know, they stay inside all day long, and then I show up with food, and that's, it's a highlight. So I want it to feel that way for them.
Stay with us, because I heard Aaron react to you in the background there, and I just want to give Aaron a chance to talk to you for a minute. Aaron, go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I love that you are realizing that, like, the color brings joy, because for me and my brand and what I do is I'm, like, a very colorful person, and I think that it's, like, a beautiful way to express yourself, and I think that in wearing colors and kind of, like, pushing yourself, it also inspires other people, because everyone's at their own, like, everyone's at a different journey in their personal style. So some people are, like, waiting to be able to come out with their colorfulness. So I think right. That's, like, so beautiful that you, like, you know, the joy is really important right now.
Oh, thanks. The other thing that happens, my face mask is a pattern that's a dog whistle to fans of the band Fish with a PH. And I'll be running around the store, and the meat guy at Whole Foods will be like, "Oh, hey, you know, it's too bad they had to postpone summer tour," and you know, we'll bond over that, and like, you know, it's become sort of part of my identity. And actually, one of the other I work for a different company than Instacart, and one of the other shoppers recognized me from my picture on the internet the other day based on that bus. That I wear around my face.
That's great.
So, John, thanks so much for that call. I appreciate it. And for kind of giving us a glimpse into the way that we communicate with each other through fashion. Kimberly, obviously, John talked again about his mask there and the sense that he is actually signaling kind of community. Hey, I'm a guy who likes Fish. It invites other people to engage with him, even though, of course, with that mask on, you can't see his eyes very well, or, you know, you can't get those same facial expressions. You don't know if he's smiling. So as you say, masks can really be, I mean, we're going to have to wear them. So they can be a way to invite sense of community and belonging with each other, even though they're really a barrier. Is that right?
Well, one of the things about the idea of color and pattern and smiles and all of that is I do think you can still tell if someone's smiling because of the way their eyes crinkle up when you smile. But I think color, you know, it's the first thing someone's going to notice on your face. And I have a number of friends who are costumers and designers, in addition to Aaron, but who are now choosing their daily mask, right? So which one are they going to wear today? Are they feeling like they want to wear a blue toile? Or, you know, a bright yellow, imperial yellow kind of silk or whatever type of mood they might be in, something that resembles a quilt or a calico textile. I almost imagine some of these very talented colleagues having a whole array of masks and having them each on a hook for a different day, you know, day of the week, or your mood masks. That's
definitely.
Aaron, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I'm like over here. I wish you could see my head. I'm like shaking it. Cause I've been making masks since March 21st. And primarily I've been making masks for, frontline workers, ranging from like nurses, doctors, janitors, like homeless, like anyone that's been needing them. And over the past like few weeks, I've been developing, sort of like this identity with masks, because, you know, before I wasn't making masks, and now I, you know, I've created this mask that has a bow, so you tie it behind and wrap it around a bun, and it's just super feminine and cute and a way to be, again, playful. And then I have art masks where I've reached out to a couple local artists as well as my dad, and I got their art printed on fabric and made them like a little bit chicer, and some of the proceeds go to the artist to support them during this time. But then also the person who buys it, they can feel super unique with this like custom fabric. And then like this other mask that I've been working on, which has been my favorite, is out of Ripstop, which is like a waterproof, breathable material. And that one I'm making a bit sportier and definitely, like, I would say more gender neutral. And this one, I'm super excited about the development of it because it's not cotton. It has cotton lining, but the outside is, like I said, waterproof. So, and since like COVID travels through the vapor, and again, like we don't know the specific droplet sizes, but I'm really excited about this one. So
that sounds great.
I'd love to pick up another. It does. I'd love to pick up another call here. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've got Malika on the line from Roxbury. Malika, please go ahead.
Hi, I'm originally from Michigan, moved here in January. by way of Ohio. And I'm a 70 years old, archaeologist, U of M grad, a designer.
Go blue.
My son calls me Fabric Leather Wood Mechanic on Instagram. And everybody thought I was weird because in the Midwest, you know, I was wearing all my own clothing, my own designs and all of that. And I've been wearing the mask when I come here for 11 years because of the smog. Now, my son says, Mommy, all my friends said, where's your mother? We thought she was crazy. For 40-something years, she's been carrying around baggies with alcohol or bleach on them and wipes and go bags and emergency stuff and first aid stuff. And now, and she wipes off your shoes and makes us wipe off the, you know, the groceries. Everything she's been doing for 40-something years, it's now in. And we thought you were crazy. Well, I'm like, thank you, son. Okay.
So, Malika, you weren't crazy. You were just ahead of your time. And so thank you for that call, Malika. And we love you for being ahead of your time, because it's true. A bunch of the stuff you were doing certainly does not look crazy now. How do we put kind of being ahead of the curve in the context here around the pandemic, the things that are changing, even things, Aaron and Kimberly, like companies that went casual a few years ago and now suddenly everyone's in sweatpants because you're not in front of each other anymore. You know, how do we think about these curves and what the next curve is going to be?
My thing is, I really think there's going to be like up two ends of the poles. Like, I think that they're going to have like ultra comfort, and then there's still going to be a need to want to dress up because, you know, there is social media. So, you know, we can't discredit the fact that we're going to be online. And so that will still be a thing. So I don't know. I think that it's going to be a high and a low. Like, there may not be too much of a middle.
I agree.
Kimberly, how about you?
Very much, because I think we're sort of starting to see what we wear more, maybe as you say, in sort of polar ends of expressions of ourselves. So, you know, there's the all black, you know, joggers and whatever you wear during the day, and then something that you'll wear if you're, you know, even getting together with family for a graduation event. You know, my niece graduated from Penn State over the weekend, and almost everybody got dressed up and actually put on, you know, makeup, earrings, nice clothes, probably for most of us the first time in a couple months. but there was something about the occasion, even though it was via Zoom, that it made it special. And I think you'll continue to see that because people will be, you know, anxious to show that.
Yeah. Well, and I think that it's also, I mean, I love dressing up because I love being super lazy and wearing a double XL t-shirt and sneakers, but then I love to also, you know, just be ridiculous and put on makeup because it kind of builds a self-esteem and makes you feel good about yourself. So, I mean, I've always dressed for myself anyways. So I feel like, at least for me, I'm kind of hoping that people start realizing that the reason to dress up and to put on makeup and to find cute clothes is really for yourself. It's never been for anyone else.
Right. That's right.
So Aaron and Kimberly, we've got 1 minute left of content here. And the last thing I want to ask you is, people are experiencing financial hardship. So how does one do fashion when you don't have a lot of money or you might really be hurting financially? Just briefly, Kimberly, what's your thought?
Oh, okay.
I think that one of the things that that we've all always done and probably will see more of is using vintage, using secondhand. You know, even some of the big companies now have an entire site, part of their site where you can buy vintage, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, even early 2000s items. I also think this is...
I'm sorry, Kimberly. Actually, I appreciate that second thought, but I've got less than a minute, so I want to give Aaron a chance to answer
right.
that one too.
Go ahead.
I totally agree with Kimberly. Secondhand's amazing. My thing is, I really, and I hope, people get more excited about making more things and get inspired to create their own stuff.
That was
and
exactly.
Is there a fabric everybody has at home, Erin, that you say, hey, turn to your closet and look for this fabric?
Cotton is the easiest thing to work with. And I would say to start there and then you can grow.
All right. That is Erin Robertson. She's a Boston-based fashion designer and winner of the Project Runway season 15. Erin, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Kimberly Alexander, who teaches museum studies, material culture, and American history at the University of New Hampshire. This has been fun. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you so much.